If Murray supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blubbity Blah.
Sending out good vibes.
Good vibes. Underneath breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grimerica Show, coming at you with the mid-May app right before our trip. I mean, I'm leaving first thing tomorrow morning. Randall, I already talked to Randall today. Randall is in Salt Lake City already at the hotel. The crew is starting to get in some today and the rest tomorrow morning. And then we're off all over southern Idaho for the next 6 days with everyone. Crewing around. It's going to be good. Mike's going to give us Mike Weeks is coming to give us a Tycos presentation at some point. He's been practicing up for that. So we're going to do a Tycos thing one night, which should be interesting. And then we got everybody's favorite autist, Kevin from Unpaved, is coming down too. I talked to him just the other day. He was in Utah already. And it worked out pretty good because we're going to do the stargazing night. So it'll be nice to have he's got his little bar set up. He can
see. Oh, he's got the van and everything. Yeah.
They'll have his van so we can get everyone to have some, if people want drinks, they can have some drinks, and all that sort of stuff.
Unpaved, right? Is Kevin.
Yeah. Unpaved. Kevin is coming. It's, that guy just sort of stumbled into everything, didn't he?
So northern Utah as well, right? So northern Utah, southern Idaho, is that what you said?
Yeah, we fly into Salt Lake City. I fly into Salt Lake tomorrow morning.
But then you travel fairly quickly into Idaho, or?
We stay at by the airport the first night, have a dinner, do a presentation. Randall do a presentation, meet and greet, all that. And then Monday morning, we head out of Utah. So I don't know the exact time throughout the day Boise to Salt Lake City is really only, it's like a 4-hour drive on the interstate. We're going to manage to put on like 800 some miles, I think, between the two places. It's the way Brad was saying, because I was like, it's funny because I told the drivers, I was like, hey, this one won't be bad, man. We're driving like literally 4 hours up the highway. So, and then Brad's like, it's like 240 miles this day. And then, so we're all sort of off and off and off and back and forth. So sometime on the Monday, we will get out of Salt Lake or out of Utah. And because the second night we do stay in Idaho Falls.
And then it's Idaho the rest of the time.
And it's Idaho the rest of the time. Interesting. Right up until we drive everyone back to Salt Lake City Airport. Yeah. I mean, if it would have been like the last trip where we had a Portland at the end, we would have told people to fly out of there is, I think, one person flying out of Boise, but Boise is kind of a bitch it's kind of a bitch of an airport. It's not direct from any place. So basically if you stopped in Boise, you would fly to Salt Lake City anyway. You know what I mean? You're going to go there and change planes.
Yeah.
Dude, Boise's cheap though. I got to say, I was surprised at how cheap it was to fly to Boise. Cheaper than Salt Lake City even. Like $200 Canadian, you can fly from here to Boise, but you got to go all over Hell's Half Acre to get there. From here to Seattle to... Anyway, yeah, it'll be a good one. Contact@thecabin.com if people want to check that out. It's gearing up to be a good trip.
Any last minute spots available? Or
there is like one spot left. But by the time this comes out, we'll be gone.
Oh, yeah, this comes out on Monday. Yeah, we're doing it before you go, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just calling it. No, there's no rooms left right now. We kind of ended up using them up. I do have like two half rooms that I could fit some people into, but it's just screw it, you know? At some point, it's a little late to start trying to figure that out. Now, it'll be a good trip. We got a good crew and a bunch of people we've hung out with before. So we We got that. And then, of course, we got the other trip coming up in fall to the Azores. We got another trip to Easter Island coming up. And I'm supposed to be talking with Brad and Randall about maybe doing a weekend in Illinois or something like that this September, maybe early September. They're looking at like maybe doing just a 2 or 3 day little mini tour down there. So we'll see. Might be another surprise tour coming up yet, like a sort of a, hopefully a cheaper one. We're trying to get it down to a low price point where it's just a couple of days and we can get it in there for half of what we've been doing the other ones at and do like a low capacity type thing and just knock it out. I've never been to Illinois. So I mean, all I think about when I hear Illinois is Chicago, but I'm sure there's like the rest of it is probably quite nice. New Pope's from Chicago.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Wow.
Chicago just makes me think of corruption.
I know. Me too.
Anyway, what have you been up to?
I got the tub in. So, you know, I got to put the railing back on the staircase. I took it off just in case, but the delivery guys couldn't get it in the door. In the front door. So I took it out of the box and brought it in myself. So yeah, I'm just doing the reno, you know, working on the renos, working on the books. I'm doing a live read on Adult Brain audiobook channel of the Magus, which is from 1801. So it's kind of like a history of magic and natural magic and kind of like Agrippa's work, but it also includes the Kabbalah and hermeticism and stuff like that. So I'm doing that on YouTube channel if people want to see that happen.
Adult Brain YouTube, Adult Brain audiobooks YouTube channel. So no bath yet though. It's just down in the room.
Yeah, the plumbers are probably coming next week. We got to redo all the plumbing down here too. So not all of it, but most of it.
You're still a while away before you're having a bath.
Yeah.
That's too bad. I ran over a rope with the lawnmower today, so I had to take all the blades off to get the rope untangled. I didn't even see it there. It was like just the end of the rope coming out of the shed, and it got caught in the blade, and then it pulled the whole rope and some camo netting that was attached to the rope all out of the shed and into the lawnmower blades. So that turned into a whole production, you know, and you're just like, it's the last day before I'm going away. And I just got to go cut the lawn. I got a good riding lawnmower. It's fast. You know, I can get my lawn cut in like literally 20 minutes. I can have the front and back lawn cut, but then I spent an hour fucking with the blades. So whatever time, you know, it always seems to be the case when you're in a rush.
I don't think I've started mine up yet this year, so I got to check that out. I had to get it
right. I was not going to, but I was looking at the lawn last night.
Yeah, it comes fast all of a sudden.
Yeah, if I don't cut this shit, then when I come back, it's going to be a fucking shit show. You know, like when it gets to a certain length, even with the rider, sure, it'll cut through it all without stalling out. But then you just have like a pile of shit everywhere. You know what I mean? Like, cause then it's where you got to drive over it a million times and cut all that shit up. But you notice, dude, it's like if we had a vapor canopy, the grass would be 100 feet tall. Cause it's everywhere the sun fucking hits this shit most of the day. There's almost no grass right now. It's already turning brown underneath if you're not on it with the water right away, but like underneath the boat, underneath the trampoline, any place that has sort of shade all day, the grass is out of control. It grows so fast, it's fucking crazy. So if you had a vapor canopy, I just have to assume that everything would just, I mean, there's certain stuff that wouldn't be the case, I guess, with, but I feel like a lot of the trees and stuff prefer indirect sunlight.
Well, you know, what's weird is it reminds me of this occult book I was reading about alchemy and how the sun is actually like it kills things. Like, you know, people think the sun is like life and all that stuff, but it's stuff grows in the dark, like mold and all the dark stuff. Right. So they talk about darkness being the place where stuff grows.
Yeah. It takes in the energy from the sun during the day. And then, but if the sun was out all day, I mean, it kills my grass where the sun hits, like on the south side where the sun hits it all day. It hasn't been hot yet this year, really, you know, but it's just beating in that sun all day. The grass don't grow. And then right beside that fucking 4 feet away where the shed blocks it all day, the grass is 2 feet tall.
I told you about that yesterday when we were outside, when the mosquitoes came. I've never ever experienced the first mosquitoes of the year hatching in front of you, basically. Like, they just appeared out of nowhere. All of a sudden, 1 minute there was no mosquitoes, the next minute they're all over the place. And it's not just like located in our yard. I was walking through the park coming from downtown, and not downtown, the little town. And I was like, why all of a sudden all these mosquitoes were all over me? Like, just all of a sudden. And I thought it was because I went through the park, and then I came home and everybody was freaking out at home too. They're like, oh, they just came out in the back all of a sudden. So like, it was just like, they all just at one point in the whole area, right? Probably the temperature was right.
All
that
in the grass, right?
They all came and poof, all at once.
They're all in the grass. It's all like everywhere. And then it's just like the temperature or the humidity or the something is just like, bing.
That's right. And then they all came and I'm like, oh man, I thought, you know, for a while there, the bugs weren't so bad. So hopefully they're not too bad. But I got bit a couple times today walking around. So
there's none here yet. So
that's good.
It got pretty cold the other night. Went down to zero again the other night. So a 32 for the Americans to freezing. Went down to freezing. But it's hot again today. So, I mean, I haven't looked at the weather. But I don't know. Hopefully rain soon. This early summer with no rain can
you need that rain
and cause problems in the plains, but so that's all good. I'm gonna head to the airport tomorrow, get the fuck out of here for a week and see what I come home to. And then we have Cosmic Summit that if people want to go to, they can use the code.
Yeah, Grimerica 25. Get you 10% off. We recorded with George Howard too. That'll be coming out on audio in a couple of weeks, but the video is there too. Fantastic chat with him about what's happening at the Cosmic Summit this year. It's going to be cool. It's going to be a party. We're all going to be there. A bunch of friends of the show will be there and a bunch of our past guests will be there. And it's going to be a blast. Grimerica 25 gets you 10% off and then we get like a little tiny kickback from that too. So
fuck yeah.
So we will both be there. That'll be fun.
It should be fun. I'm going to, I pissed off Lobie, or however you say his name. Every time he tells me I say it wrong. It seems like no matter how I say it, it's wrong. So I give up. Anyway, I was going to go to Atlanta. And it turns out he watches the last show live when I say that I'm going to Nashville instead. And then when I get off the show, I have texts from him calling me a faggot. So Bill, just come to Summit. It's going to be a good time. You know what, honestly, what the deciding factor was for me, honestly, the only thing that changed my mind. I mean, the ticket to Nashville was half as much, but more importantly, it was direct.
Oh yeah.
I can't get to any of those other places direct. It's a two plane endeavor. And then it's like, I can get to Nashville direct and have a 7 hour drive. Or I could get to Atlanta in two planes and have like a 3 hour drive or a 4 hour drive. Or I could go to straight there in two planes. But I don't really want to go straight there. I'm kind of extending the trip a little bit. You know, we added a few days on either side of it. So it doesn't make sense to just go to Greensboro, you know? I would like to see a little more of the country. So I've never been to Tennessee. I've never been, you know, so from what I've heard, it's a pretty beautiful drive from Nashville over to... You know, Nashville, Tennessee is only like an hour and a half away from our head office.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I was going to get Mike to come up and caravan with us, but he has to work right to the bitter end. What day are you getting in?
Probably Friday.
Friday sometime?
Probably, yeah.
Right into Greensboro?
Yeah, I'm going to try. But like you said, I mean, I won't be able to do it directly. I mean, I'll probably have at least two. So, and you know what's funny? Nowadays, it's important because there's just that much of a chance, like that doubles your chance of being late or delayed or something.
Like I don't even, not even double. It's like three times. If you had a third plane in there, it's like five times.
It never used to be an issue, but lately, I don't know. Especially
if it's tight, right? You got to even start looking at it because nowadays the algorithm will let you buy a flight that you can't make it to.
No.
Well, close, you know, so close
everything
that
has to be perfect.
Anything fucking goes wrong, you're done. Or your bag just doesn't show up.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time there that every time I traveled, I just assumed my bag was not going to get wherever we're going. So We do need some support. That's one thing to mention. GrandAmerica.ca/support. We've been putting out all this podcast for 12 years now, all out there for free. I mean, our anniversary is coming up in just a couple weeks. Our 12-year anniversary, over 700 shows, all there for free. No paywalls. We don't mind. We
no
just
ads.
No ads except our own stuff. And we just need you, if you're getting some value from any of those shows, some value to maybe your commute or wherever you're listening to the show, head over to GrandAmerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation and send a little value back our way. I mean, they say time, talent, and treasure. Treasure is the most important. We'll be honest. You know, we got the time to do the show and all that. But and that's not to say it's not great. We have like Nap that does the art for us, and we have people that do stuff, Ryan running the chats and all this stuff that people do that is great. But we do need the treasure, because that is the hardest thing to get people to part with. And this is what we do. This is our thing. So we need some support to keep the wheels on. America.ca/support. Sign up for monthly or make a one-time donation too. And then you become a noble instead of a shitty pleb. You know, a freeloading pleb, you become a noble of Grand America. And that's pretty gangster.
And then a lord. I mean, eventually a lord. And then
Lord, my lord. I was talking to Lord Timmy the other day. I'll see him tomorrow. And yeah, tough to beat that. So do that. We do have some people to thank as well. We have John Crawley. I don't know if I did this one already, but I can't remember if I did.
No, I don't think so.
That was back on April 30th to give us a one-time donation of $33. So,
oh, thanks, John. Awesome.
John, we appreciate it. And then I had another one here from friend of the show, Johnny. Johnny Hipwell out there in Ontario. It was comes to the Invermere CAC. Is that Johnny?
Awesome. Boy, thanks, Johnny.
That's $33 as well. So
wow.
Popular number.
Double 33s. I like it.
33s. Well, the one was 2 weeks ago. So I don't know. That's hard to, I guess 10 days ago, because there's only 30 days in April. So GrandAmerica.ca/support, guys. If you can, when you can, sign up for a monthly or make a one time donation today. That'd be cool. We'd be happy. So anyway, what else? Do we have anything else to get to?
I don't know. Talk about the audiobooks, the Cosmic Summit, just what's going on in the world. I mean, check out Outlawed, I guess. I mean, we've been doing this Canadian news deconstruction and stuff. And I mean, it's just so crazy right now. So we're talking about all this stuff. Come over and see us on the A-List, EH-List. We separated sort of that content that was sort of organically morphing on Grimerica Outlawed, our roundup. So we just have now like a roundup that's exclusive. And then we have another Grimerica Outlawed sort of interview show. And then the A-List is our Canadian stuff. Because there's a lot going on in Canada. I mean, it's just way worse than I ever thought or imagined it could be. Having to separate myself away from this crazy dual reality, these double universes we are living in right now. So it's, so you can check that out.
AList.ca, baby. Check it out. That's where we do our no agenda style stuff with all Canadian content, though. So it's fun stuff. And we just did a great Outlawed show with those guys. What are they called again? The Nephilim dudes?
Yeah.
I mean, that was
Nephilim Death Squad with yeah, Raven.
A great chat we had with those guys over on Outlawed. People might want to check that out over at GrimericaOutlawed.ca. So
Top Lobster and Raven. Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. So other than that, I guess we might as well just get the fuck out of here, huh? I got a billion things to do.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So Chant It Down. This is an awesome chat with Loomis. Very, very similar, kind of coming to the same conclusions that we have been about ancient mysteries and organized ancient civilization, all that kind of stuff. So he says, if you ever feel like there was something wrong in this world, but you couldn't quite place a finger on it, it's time to learn how to chant it down. Or you've been slaving your whole life away, stuck to the grind, and you feel like there must be more to this existence. So chantitdownradio.com is this thing. Chant It Down Radio is your unraveling. Take you on a journey with the perspective of looking at the truth and getting to the root causes of the problems we face on this planet. This unraveling explores the manipulation, lies, and programming of humanity. We look at the destruction of the natural, our ancient past, civilization, and to look at where we're heading. We connect dots on widely diverse topics to get a broader look at a picture that's been staring us in the face this whole time. His documentary is sacredsite.info, and I will just read the last of Loomis's bio. He's a truth speaker, radio show host, ex-lyricist, activist, researcher, physical trainer, filmmaker, and philosopher of truth. And that is on his about page from Chant It Down Radio. So there you have it. Yeah, this is a good, it's a cool documentary too. We're going to be on his show coming up soon. He's also like one of the OGs. He's been around for about as long as we have in this very similar style and show to ours, I believe. So interesting.
There you have it. I got to finally go out and do some fishing season open, but it's still too early. The fish aren't, they must still be spawning down the river. I only caught one keeper.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Cassandra caught it. So we ate it. It was good. It was still a good day.
That's good. Yeah.
The motor's running good. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
I quit working last year, so I just like cleaned the carb and away she went. Is that
that little boat you have, those D's knots?
Yeah. I need a bigger one soon. It's a little small for all five of us for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's manifest Darren a bigger boat.
Bigger boat, baby.
Get some more support so Darren can take his family fishing.
That's right. I need to go fishing, bitches. Need a boat. Boats and hoes. All right, guys. We will be back next. I mean, next week's show should be unaffected because I'll be back in time, so that'll be good. So, yeah, we'll see you next week.
Have a good trip, buddy.
Yeah, I will. Have a good not trip. I'm sure I'll be in touch. All right, buddy. Enjoy the chat, guys, with the one and only Loomis.
Loomis from Chant It Down. Welcome to Gray America.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming. Yeah, congratulations on your upcoming, I guess, a couple months, 12-year anniversary, right?
Yeah. Same with you guys, huh?
About a month after us. Yeah, we've been doing this for a while now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's your, I mean, let's start there. What's your, because we're going to talk about your Sacred Site documentary, which was really cool. I mean, it's interesting to see because I'm not really too familiar with the circle of people that like that you had on to make that. You know, I know of them and stuff, but haven't really talked a lot personally to any of them. But it's just cool to see and people come to that very similar conclusion that we're coming to, you know, about all the structures. But you've gone and looked at them all. So, but I mean, how has your, you know, we're kind of ending up in the same spot in a lot of ways. How has that journey been over the last 12 years, especially in regards to like ancient mysteries?
Well, you know, like my way of coming out is into this world was I have met two insiders of the system in various forms, one in 1999 and then one in 2008. So I always felt like this information came to me rather than me looking for it. And that's why I got into this, because I was kind of exploding with information I wanted to give out, more so about like what's really going on in our world. But what I've always loved and is our ancient mysteries and stuff. So I did include that a little later on in my podcasting, like probably about 2017. So I started in 2013. I was just talking about New World Order stuff and normal, like conspiracy minded kind of research. But but my passion has always been looking into these ancient mysteries, but I didn't know I was going to go full bore into it what how I did with the documentary. But yeah, it's just been this journey of just collecting information and hearing how people respond to it. And like I said, like I was telling you in pre-show, I didn't even know I was going to do this long. I thought, yeah, 50 episodes, that'll do it. You know, just get my word out there. But then I just kept going and it became this thing like you guys do, just where you, it's that thing you do. So
yeah,
even though I have a full-time job. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how did you do the documentary, the full-time job? I mean, it looked like you put lots of travel time into getting footage. I mean, this isn't just a documentary with a bunch of B footage. I mean, yeah, obviously there's some of that, but you go to, you know, a lot of these. I mean, tell us what the theme of it is, I guess.
All right. Well, so Sacred Site, it's a documentary revealing megalithic sites around the world, known to people and unknown, and new emerging sites. But it's a double entendre, because that's why I spell the documentary Sacred Sight as with your eyes, because we have to have the sight to see this world in the real light that it really is, because the world we've been shown through the institutions of organized society is not the world that we really live in. And that's why I'm always not afraid to throw in our current situation, exposing what's happening and seeing the world with the right eyes, because it's all connected, you know, but it's becoming... Actually, it's becoming a triple kind of entendre thing. My friends who are in this movie are starting to say things like, you need the sight to see the sight, almost like LIDAR, because some of these places are still buried and not so obvious at first. But yeah, my hopes is this documentary was to add new sites to the list of pyramids and megaliths. And really, this is just the beginning. Also, the documentary exposes the cover-up of our ancient history. This came about through actual trips I took, not to make a documentary, but because I have family kind of all over the world. I was like, well, how far is it from here to Egypt? Okay, well, let's do that. And then, so it's kind of a collection of footage I took, not knowing at first I was going to do a documentary. And then by the time I made it to Egypt, I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to make a documentary. I don't know about what yet, but I got all this footage. So it just kind of evolved from there, you know?
What was Egypt like? Did that propel you further into this at all? Or because Darren and I just went there in 2022, was it, Darren? I guess, and no, it kind of
22, yeah.
It kind of changed things. Same here. Because, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you.
Did it sort of propel you into this too? Like, did you get a different view by seeing it in person, Egypt?
Yeah, it really like inspired me a lot more to actually go and see these places in person. I feel like if you don't see these places in person, it's not the same. As you guys know, you just go there and it just like inspired me, and like to see how big these things actually are and just how impossible they all are. So it totally inspired me more once I had gone to Egypt, for sure.
Anything stick out specifically, like as far as something that kind of blew you away that you weren't expecting?
The Serapeum was one of the things that I didn't know much about when I went in there, and that kind of blew my mind. How those giant coffins are bigger than the doorways that they're in are in there, and just how they uncovered it. And these are just polished granite boxes that are huge, and just to think that they were I think that was Aswan granite, I'm pretty sure it was, so that's like 600 miles away it took to bring it there, and how they did that, I mean, that blew my mind, as well as in Saqqara, the pit underneath the step pyramid. I had no idea that was so deep, and like that put my mind into the frame, like, okay, they could have built the step pyramid with small blocks, but what kind of tools would it take to dig that pit, that giant pit, you know, that
which shaft? One's the step now? Is that the one with the pottery, or is that the bend?
Yeah, that one does have the pottery down there.
So I think he's talking about the pit that's got that big granite, that square, that cube, square almost cube, cube thing, but that big cube thing. But then you see up into the pit.
Yeah. Yeah. When you get underneath the set or inside the step pyramid, you look down, there's those like cube blocks down below. Yeah. And that's where they have found those vases that they're researching now. Like,
because the bent pyramid's the one that's right by the red pyramid, right? These ones here, these sort of.
Oh yeah, that yeah. Sort of thing. Is that what you got from there?
Well, I, you know, something like that.
Yeah, so, yeah.
It doesn't happen, but it did. Yeah, I got that from the bent pyramid in Egypt. Yeah.
I didn't
make I guess it. the step pyramid.
The step pyramid, okay.
I shouldn't tell people because I can get in trouble.
Yeah, well, I know.
No, we just got this little show here. If it gets to the point where I get in trouble, then whatever. At least I got to go once.
It's a piece of plastic.
Yeah,
if you get in trouble, then it's a sign that we're doing better at podcasting.
I 3D printed this, actually, if you can believe it. I 3D printed this out of my 3D printer as a replica of a piece. So
yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Nice one. So did you do the whole tour then? Did you do the Nile boat and the, did you get to see the Serapeum and those other sort of spots? So what's the other big one? The other big one would be the, what is it? The Osiri Inn? Is that the other big underground one that was buried?
I didn't make it there. Yeah. So what I did is I did Giza, Saqqara, then took a plane to Luxor and did Luxor and Karnak. And because I was with my wife, she wanted to go to the ocean. So we went to the Red Sea and did a trip there. But that was my whole trip in a whole. So the megalithic stuff was all, you know, me doing all that. But then the Red Sea didn't really have anything, but it's cool. But yeah, so but the big that's the main things I did there. And I mean, you could go back and do a whole different set of things and still not see even half the things that are there. I didn't make it to Aswan or anything.
Yeah. So then what about these pyramids that you're trying to uncover? Like you went to some in Hawaii, you know, you're following like old legends and trying to uncover some pyramids. And I think there was one there that we got to talk about where you found some stones. I mean, what would you, I got so many questions around them, but I guess maybe describe some of those trips up through the jungle looking for buried pyramids. And, you know, there's the Bosnia one too, but maybe it's the Hawaiian ones, the one where you found the stone, which I think looked, that looked like it wasn't natural to me.
Right.
But.
Yeah. That's the island of Kauai. So, I got intel on this. I didn't actually find it myself, but we had someone who's like, I think it's a pyramid. And then they look at the, cardinal points are pointing the right directions, but it's three-sided. So it's definitely an unnatural, it's in the middle of a field. It's not connected to a mountain range. And so my son and I, well, I guess we're all going to get in trouble here anyway. So, but I snuck on private property because, it was, no choice in the matter. I didn't feel like my view on private property is if someone's actually using it, I'm not going to go in someone's backyard and trample on stuff. But if, when it's big tracts of land that no one's doing anything with, I feel like it's kind of fair game and like, you know, it's just sitting there. So I went, so we snuck and, I didn't know what to think, you know, at first, cause we're going up a tree covered hill and you go, well, you know, this could just be a mountain. And I even said that in the footage, like, yeah, just could be a mountain. I don't really know. But then I get to the top and I find, this carved stone and I should have brought it inside.
The loose carved stone.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's carved. It's got, you know, sides and corners that are really defined. But I, this was supposed to be a scouting mission, like to see how we could get to it. And we ended up just going for it. And so I wasn't prepared. All I had was a compass. So I put my compass on the stones on top and the dial turned on every single stone. There was some kind of energy field up there. And we were really tired because I did a camping trip and we got barely any sleep because of the mattresses we had were very uncomfortable. And so anyway, and I parked the rental car at a place that, you know, I was like, I don't know, you know, it's just going to be safe that long. So I had to get out of there in kind of a hurry. But on my way down, and I didn't film it, there was a perfect corner that I walked down on. I don't know why I didn't film it. I just was exhausted. And I found rocks with carvings on them and stuff. But so when we were done with that footage and I left the island, I was contacted by the same source and he had talked to a local there that says it's one of five pyramids on the island. And then I showed a geologist that stone, and he said it's definitely a carved stone, and the vegetation on that three-sided structure, pyramid, whatever you want to call it, is all introduced vegetation from the last 200 to 300 years here in Hawaii, because most of Hawaii's vegetation has been brought in that you see currently has been brought in as introduced to Hawaii for various reasons. So that might have been a bare structure before 200 to 300 years ago when all these introduced trees were brought to Hawaii. So yeah, it might have been intentionally buried. I don't know, but it's definitely a promising thing. We're going to go back when I do the sequel, and we're going to hopefully get LIDAR. That's the next step, really. But yeah, it's pretty exciting.
So, but you did film some of the stones there.
Yeah,
that looked. They just didn't look like they were naturally. It was almost like a. Was it like a wall, or the way they were cornered? They were stepped, kind of like in your. And I just thought, that doesn't really look natural.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not natural, and
but it's the not way, super megalithic either. I mean,
no, it's not huge stones, but just the fact that there is a pyramid in Hawaii. More multiple, that's something, because it connects this megalithic world or this pyramid building world to the rest of the pyramid building world. And I think what I did a lot of research on, there's pyramids on all kinds of islands. You know, you can go to the Azores, the Canary Islands, Tahiti had one, Captain Cook journaled it in his book. The South Pacific has a few other, Samoa has one, they think. So it's not that crazy to think about that there is pyramids here, but we are the most isolated island chain in the world. So it does make it pretty, hard to find. But if we're going to consider then maybe that's what we're looking as a left.
And there it is right there, right? There's your Hawaii right there. But I mean,
trail of islands coming out from like Japan, where you could have sort of just ticked along and followed.
Yeah. If you're
taking water out of this situation, if the sea level was actually 400 feet lower, then it becomes sort of a chain, which I wanted to ask you, did you look in the water around Hawaii? I've never heard anyone saying there's anything in the water around Hawaii, but you'd think that would be a natural spot to have some sort of stuff from before the water came up.
Well, so we ran into a source. Now this is on the Big Island where we were in search for this other pyramid. And this old Hawaiian auntie told us that, there is one underwater in line with the one that we were looking at, but we haven't gotten that far, 'cause that's going to take scuba equipment and serious, I don't know how to scuba dive. I could snorkel there, but
I'm not interested in that kind of shit, man. I'm like a land Indian through and through. I don't like even being I'm a little like freaked out to even go to Easter Island. Honestly, it's like, we're just gonna be on this little speck of fucking land
right here. Look at that. I mean,
are you guys gonna go?
Yeah,
we're going next March. We're doing it as one of our events. Yeah, we're doing an all-inclusive thing out of Chile, out of Santiago for a week. And
look at that. It's on the edge of that whole ridge there, right? Which is similar to how Hawaii is just over here on that ridge.
Right. Yeah. The one from Hawaii is called the Emperor Seamount. You can see goes all the way up to the Aleutian Islands of Alaska there. Yeah. But Easter Island kind of freaks me out. I once did a flight from New Zealand to Santiago, and that flight freaked me out because there's nothing between those two points. I mean, maybe Easter Island if you're lucky, but if your plane goes
yeah, look at that. Hey, that is a long stretch of Atlantic or Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. 12 and a half hours, man. It was
Love these maps now. I mean, this is so fascinating that we can see all this, right? I mean, imagine this whole area with 400 feet less water, right? All of this. I mean, and then over here too, this is where we're going.
Do we have one that you can take the water out, Graham?
I don't know. And then we're going here too.
Are you guys going to the Azores?
We got to get a hold of Randall, because Randall, I swear Randall has a map that you can like take water out of the equation and it makes it all look so much different. It's crazy. Oh, wow. Yeah, we're going to the Azores too this November. Yeah, I mean, we get two trip plugs in just in the interview, because a lot of people skip the intro. So yeah, we're going to the Azores. Contact at thecabin.com if you want to. We're going to the Azores actually with Randall Carlson to look for Atlantis.
Very cool. That's awesome.
That's why I'm so excited to talk to you about your documentary, because you were kind of doing what we wanted. I mean, I don't know how much bushwhacking we're going to do. You guys were hacking away some bushes on your trips here, but you know, we're still looking for maybe some evidence. I mean, who knows, right? It is still kind of like, there is still the chance you may stumble across something. Like if you're in that, like you found that, like the marks, and those marks remind me of marks, I think that might even be on the Azores, the marks you found on those rocks.
Yeah. You never know. I've wanted to look up the symbols. So I did look at for Mu, the symbols, nothing like that, but that could be something more global that we don't know about, these symbols. Yeah. So I did compare it to the symbols I found at the rocks in Bosnia, actually. But they're not the same, but just because they were carvings on rocks, it was interesting enough.
So where would you spend your time on the next? Well, I guess you're doing a sequel anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, where do you think after doing all this, like, where would you put your time to maybe try and uncover something?
Well, we're going to go back to the sites we found in the first, and also in Australia, my friend Triffin is bringing all kinds of new stuff to the table, which is really awesome. And I don't know, I'm probably gonna have to do some crowdfunding or something, because I don't have the money, but I mean, I would really like to expand this into the South Pacific and explore this whole Mu, because there's a lot of things in the South Pacific that are megalithic that most people have never even seen on film. There's some great stuff in Tonga. There's some stuff, well, Easter Island, of course.
I gotta share this again, because when you say South Pacific, you're talking like French Polynesia and all that, or like
French Polynesia, and then Tonga, which would be
right here,
right. And Samoa has the Pulu Mele mound, and there's stuff here and there. And then, of course, if you go to Micronesia, you got Nam Madol. There's coral pyramids. There's carved, if you go to the island of Guam, there's these crazy little statues. They're called latte stones. And if you ever look them up, they're these huge round things they've carved out of the earth and stacked on top of other rocks. And yeah, it's just, there's a lot there to explore. So I think if willing money coming my way, which who knows where the hell that's going to come from, I would love to include more sites in this area, because that fills in more of the Mu mystery, as well as just, it's kind of like what you guys are doing with Atlantis. I'm trying to do over here in the Pacific. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Which man. would that include Bora Bora? I guess it does include Mu, because it's over between these continents, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's right along that ridge there. I mean, this whole thing might have been like, this whole ridge, you might have been able to see from the island. What?
Throw your screen on your ground.
Those are the latte stones.
Now you should check out the quarry site if you can. Then it really shows some laser like cutting. Like, there's no way that people with chisels and tools would have ever been able to do this. So, I mean, yeah, it's just. Yeah, if you can find anything like that, that's it's.
I'll pretty look crazy. For the quarry, Graham.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just showing this ridge here that goes from like there's Easter Island right there. So Santiago, there's this ridge underneath that goes all the way to French Polynesia. I mean, all the way to the other side. So you know, if they had a few hundred feet, I don't know how much, like 400 feet would do, but. You know, don't forget there's the sinking and the raising as well that they talk about with the isostatic depression and all that, where that is a real thing. When the ice melted 12,000 years ago, things did sort of shift elevation wise. So that could have brought up this ridge even more, you know, you could have been island hopping from one continent to the other via this.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, all the oral legends in the Polynesian cultures talk about an older culture, a Mu, and other, you know, a history. There you go. Yep, those are the quarry. That's, you know, it's pretty crazy.
So they just took that right out of solid stone.
Yeah, and moved it. And I don't even think that's. I've kind of done a little research. I don't even think that's on the same island as Guam. So they had to move these things from this island to Guam and then stack them on those stones.
There's that 2 foot. I swear there's a 2 foot minimum clearance for whatever tool they were using back then. There's always a gap. I mean, even on Easter Island over that Moai in the Egyptian Aswan quarry, there's that gap. I mean, I really feel like whatever they were doing, they had the minimum clearance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was there any sort of, it almost looks like there's the same sort of scooping marks just with stuff growing over it. Did you, cause well, so when you were in Egypt, did you notice this sort of scooping phenomena in some of the places? Is that the same sort of thing here?
I think it is. I definitely noticed it in Egypt though. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that I didn't have help. I did watch Brian Forrester's videos and the videos showed me the scoop marks, which maybe I wouldn't have known to look for, but when I went down in Australia and we found that rock wall in Gympie, I noticed scoop marks on those too, polygonal rock wall. So,
and that was crazy to me, that polygonal rock wall. It looked like it had either been weathered way, way longer. Cause we saw a block in Karnak.
Yeah.
It looked like it was like a rectangular granite block that had been eroded for like, 20,000 years or like a long time. Like, but that Australian one blew me away from your documentary. Those marks what do you know what kind of stone that was that those marks were in and that you found that cut? There's even the cut marks. It's like they quarried blocks out of that.
Yeah. Are you talking about the imprint mark?
Yeah. And next to the imprint, that whole area there.
Yeah, that's sandstone. So it's not the hardest of stones, but it's probably like a 4 on the Mohs scale or so. Yeah. But whatever that imprint was, that is unique because it was one. It definitely wasn't a repeatedly pressed in mark. It's like a one time pressed into the stone or melted, or it's a big mystery. I mean, and then my friend Triffin, who was in there, he's talking about a geologist came and saw that, that area is obviously it been cut. So whatever the imprint was, might've been a stone cutting type of tool, which is really missing from, all this is like, what did they use for all this? What made the scoop marks? Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to think that the stone itself was a completely different hardness, or it was soft back then, or there was some kind of alchemical change in the atmosphere, or these things were hardened through a catastrophe. I mean, I just finished reading Ragnarok, Age of Fire and Gravel, and it talks about how it seems like these things are, there's these stones that have been kind of melted together through, they think it was through the tail of being like, exposed to the tail of a comet, like that. There's almost like, some of these firestorms are created because the atmosphere is bombarded from cometary tails and stuff like that. I don't know how much of that has changed in the last 150 years with the science, but they were definitely thinking that there was some merging of different types of stones or hardening of some stones into others, that kind of thing. So it makes me wonder if the environment was so different back then that they could mold these things,
Yeah. I've thought about that too. And I've done some research into things like, there's cultures on the earth that talk about a time before the moon. And I've wondered if the moon came into the existence of humanity and changed the composition of this whole planet. And maybe that's what tilted the planet to a 23 degree axis, mm-hmm. because there's something crazy about that. And of course you can go into the Zulu legends with Credo Mutwa, not just him. I mean, it's just like a legend in their culture, talking about these two brothers, Moane and Mapanku, hollowed out the moon, brought it to the earth and popped a water vapor around the earth. And if you connect that to Genesis, there was a water vapor like thing around the earth. And it just interesting. I don't know, but I've gone on that research rabbit hole a bit, and it's made me wonder if the earth was just had a different gravity to it or something, a different composition, how they could carve these stones or move them. I mean, we don't know. That's the thing. The more you research into this, the more questions you have.
Does somebody know? I mean, because I like how you go there too in this documentary, because that's kind of what I'm thinking when, like, there's a reason why they don't want us to know all this stuff, why they cover it up. There's a lot of reasons, actually.
Yeah. And my thoughts about the cover of this is that they tore a chapter or chapters out of our history, really, because we had, giants in our past. We had elongated skulls. We had crazy looking petroglyphs and geoglyphs, and that shows that this planet was way more diversified in human species, humanoid species, that Homo sapiens sapiens must have shared this planet with others. I mean, you could possibly dismiss the crazy petroglyphs in places like Grand Gallery, Utah, as indigenous on psychedelics, maybe. I don't know. But you can't dismiss elongated skulls and giants. And so I think there's definitely missing chapters. And I feel like that the this is why I've diverted this information so much on my own show, is because I feel like it's one of the biggest important things in our that we need to know about is our human origins, and that there was an advanced global megalithic culture on the Earth that did this advanced construction and built crazy things we can't do today. And our human timeline is really much different to what we've been told. And so I feel like that somebody does know these. I feel like there's secret societies that, you know, they talk about they used to rape the mind of the shaman and then kill him, that kind of thing. I feel like the secret societies came along with the Crusades and went to some of these places and took the information and kept it to themselves. I mean, and we've seen that in modern day. We've seen that with the Iraq War. They took the U.S. military, raided some museums. ISIS destroyed ancient Sumerian tablets. So, I mean, the cover-up's big and it's worldwide, because a lot of these places, like, it goes down to the line of those who established our education system and established archaeology. You know, why haven't they completely excavated places like Tiwanaku and Pumupunku? You know, they found underground caverns and with ground penetrating radar, or what's under Stonehenge, like,
or even Egypt. You know, yeah, like, they know there's a bunch of stuff in Egypt, and they don't even bother.
Right. Yeah. Let alone Giza. I mean, that's those new findings lately. What do you guys think about that? Anyway, I was going to ask you that, or I haven't really talked with many people about those new findings.
It's tough because I've got people that I respect on either side of it. Some say it's bull crap and others say it's, there's something there. What it is remains to be seen. I mean,
well, we all know there's something underneath Giza, though. I mean,
that's for sure.
It's just how they get to what they showed from what they scanned. Like, I don't really like how it's gone from this to that, but I know there's stuff. There's, you know, there's I believe there's tunnels all over the plateau, like from pyramid to pyramid to pyramid. I mean, you can see the pyramids when you're at one. You can see the other one, then you can go to that one and see both sides, and it's all on that big plateau. So, you know, I think they're all connected underground. I mean, because we know how crazy the tunnels are in Saqqara, and I mean, who knows how much is connected underground?
Yeah, I think so. And that just to know that hasn't been all excavated, or at least to our knowledobat least for the public, or Göbekli Tepe. People that's in my documentary is Mike Collins, and he went there with what's that guy's name? Jimmy Corsetti, and I don't know if you've seen those videos and how they built stuff right over some of those T-pillars that is for the walkway, for the canopy that's around it. And they're not excavating. They're not even attempting.
I think that might've changed very recently. I don't know if Corsetti caused such a fuss on X and on the internet that they actually have started digging again or something. I'm not sure, but I haven't kept completely up to date, but I felt like something was shifting there.
Yeah. Maybe so, maybe. But it's just interesting that's the cover-up. It's like, it is a cover-up because, I mean, just the coming down to the description that the archaeologists, what they think and how they think all this was made with copper tools or this or that, it's like, that's just crazy. It's obvious that, and many academics are pretty arrogant. I mean, they think they went to the greatest schools in the world and the knowledge base of the world, and they think there's nothing left to explore because that's what they've been told. And I just think that they're in a closed system of their own. And it's up to people like us kind of really to do the exploration and do the job ourselves, because they're certainly not doing it.
So from a skeptical point of view, like if I was playing devil's advocate, what's the big deal if people knew? Like, why would they cover it up? I mean, what's that argument?
Well, I would say just because I think they're trying to cover up that there was an advanced civilization in the past, and it wasn't a linear progression from hunter-gatherers to civilization to what we live in today. And I think also when you take away people's origin points, then they don't know who they are, where they are, you know, and it just really, like, it scrambles us as our, it scrambles our identity as humanity. And I think that was done on purpose. And I think just human origins in general, I mean, I look into, you know, you can look into Darwin's theory, you can look into creation theory, and it's like, neither of them quite ring true to me, you know. And then you could go into, I like the work of Lloyd Pye, you know, he kind of looked at all that and put some good stuff together. But like, yeah, I mean, this stuff, if we don't know our origins, we don't know what we're doing here in the present. And I think that's where they want us. They just want us to be in this rat race, making digits on screen or paper. And, you know, just, I don't know what kind of energy we're feeling somewhere. I've thought about, you know, like, what are we, are, is it like the Matrix? Are we powering some kind of battery, but whatever, I don't know, but we're it, this, I, you just take a look at our existence and you know, something's wrong. We're not connected to what we should be.
And the cataclysm aspect too is important to hide from us, I think. I mean, that's going to probably come out before they can. I don't think they can hold a lot of this back anymore, to be honest. I think it's going to come out, and it might be all part of a UFO disclosure that brings this whole reality to a different sort of thing. But the cataclysm, they don't want us to realize how they need the uniformitarianism climate change narrative on us. They don't want us to think that we're apt to a cataclysm anytime, you know, anytime we can just be wiped off the face of the earth. I mean, I think that's the other thing they want to keep from us. And then Curtis in the chats here says mud flood global apocalypse 200 years ago. Yeah, those are interesting theories. I think there was a mud flood global apocalypse, but I don't think it was 200 years ago myself. But
when do you think it was?
I don't know, actually. I don't know.
Older than that?
Oh, yeah.
Has anyone ever carbon dated some of this mud, like, to see if it's, you know, 200 years older?
I don't know. I'm sure they have, but that could be where they get the till from the glaciers, from the Younger Dryas, right? When the glaciers melted. I mean, I'm kind of stuck on the mainstream timeline of Younger Dryas, 12,800 years ago or whatever, that we were under all this ice. I mean, I know there's a whole bunch of conspiracies that are saying that those timelines are off, like with what's his name? Oh, who am I thinking of, Darren? it'll come to me. Yeah, we had him on the show, and now I'm gapping out. But
RKX,
RKX, yeah. Jason Brashears, who's you know, he's got a whole following now, and that this is all, and it might be like what Curtis is saying in the chats there about a different timeline, you know. But he's got really interesting thing. I mean, four books that he talks about, ancient books, point to a cataclysm, which could be the collapse of the vapor canopy or this mud flood apocalypse. I think it's 3359 BC or 3329 BC or something. So that's an interesting date to me, because it does correspond with other things as well. But it might be more like when the Younger Dryas happened, you know.
It could be, except for like those buildings, you can go in any old city. Like, I live in Honolulu, it's not too old as far as architecture, but some of the older cities on the mainland US and places, they're, the first floor is buried, or, you know, in places in Europe too. So there is something to that, but I'm not saying that it was a huge catastrophe that changed the entire earth and reset its civilization. I don't believe that with the mud flood, personally, in my so far research of it anyway.
Yeah.
Doesn't it have to be, though? I mean, if we don't know about it, or
you what? Sorry.
Doesn't it have to be if we don't know? Like, if it's not part of the history books, doesn't it have to be sort of wipe sort of things out to a certain extent? I mean, the weird thing is that you got this sediment, like Easter Island, these statues are buried in shit.
Karnak.
Epi's buried and stuff. I mean, yeah. You'd have a hard time convincing me that they buried the statues on Easter Island on purpose, because that'd be, you know, you're carting stuff up to the top of the mountain. But where, so you get into that, like, was that all the same thing? Could that all have been the same thing? And if it is, how do you get the mud up to the top of Easter Island? And then you start looking into some of Hapgood stuff, and you know, and it's, some of it sounds crazy, but then you look and they found all this stuff. They found all these bones crammed into a cave, and it's like, well, how did this shit get lions and shit up in the caves in the UK in Scotland? And it's like, well, how did that shit get there? And it's like, the only way you can see is if it was like everything got washed over by, you know, so it's not even a mud flood. It's like everything got just washed over with the ocean almost, you know, and whatever.
Like a pole shift completely, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Or change the whole face of the earth, like half
flopping for just a second, and that was enough for the water kept going, you know?
Do you think that was in that time 200 years ago, or are we talking
Think this is what happened before the pyramids, I would say. That would be like a before the pyramid thing.
Yeah, I think that too. I mean, but this more recent.
Thing, I don't think before the pyramids.
After the pyramids might like be the not 200 years ago. This would be what wiped out whatever civilization built them fucking things.
And then, of course, you have the in the Sphinx enclosure, the watermarks, and that would probably be that same event. I would think too, a long time ago. The water line.
Yeah, well, I mean, so our buddy, the ethical skeptic, he's done this whole breakdown on how there's those lines up on the top of the pyramid, the top of the Great Pyramid. There's this specific karst erosion that can only happen from water. So he's convinced that there was water up to that level of the Great Pyramid for, I think he said it would have to be at least 50 years or something like that. But that would put the Sphinx completely underwater.
So oh, wow.
I don't know how much that would sort of change that thing. It's hard to think about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. But you must think, though, that the elites of this world must know this story and must have had some things carry over from this reset in order to even come out with the power that they've had for so many generations. You would think that these secret societies would have a lot more knowledge of this.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that this book was written in the 1880s. And this is where I think they were, I think where some of the modern mud flood myths have come, but they were talking about this back then. So this is like what they call the drift or the till. And he says, this till is so tough that engineers would much rather excavate the most obdurate rocks than attempt to remove it from their path. Hard rocks are more or less easily assailable with gunpowder and numerous joints and fissures. Let me just see here. I don't know if this is a good one to read, but it's basically, here's a cut of this till overlaid with boulder clay, right? So what they say is this is covering like half the earth. Like there's a massive area that's covered with this drift, but nowadays we call it a till. In this till or hard pan are found some strange and characteristic stones. They are boulders, not water-worn, not rounded as by the action of waves, and yet not angular. For every point and projection had been ground off. They are not very large, and they differ in this and other respects. So they're finding it. It's all in a weird, like, it laid down. It didn't lay down like it settled down over like thousands of years or millions of years. It's like it was just placed there, right, through a cataclysm.
Yeah.
So I think that's like what they're describing back in the 1880s is like the mud flood. It's just, maybe there was recent ones too in more localized areas. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe it wasn't so severe, because I talked to somebody on the podcast about this before. I have a relative who was literate in the early 1800s, wrote about life and wrote about things, never mentioned a mud flood, you know, so maybe it wasn't as big of a deal as people are making it out to be now. I think the focus on the big cataclysms is more important anyway, because anything that reset the earth, anything that, you know, changed, had that big of a change, that's what I'm interested in mainly, you know.
But yeah
yeah
so he says Above this boulder clay, we find sometimes beds of loose gravel and sand and stones mixed with the remains of man and other animals. So it's all mixed together. They all have the appearance of being later in their deposition and of having been worked over by the action of water and ice. This then is briefly stated the condition of the drift. It is plain that it was the result of violent action of some kind. This action must have taken place upon an unparalleled and continental scale. And so and this is scientists and stuff, right? I mean, these are from Popular Science Monthly and all these. And I think it's before they started to sort of clamp down and cover up. They did some good science in the 1800s.
Yeah.
But now they're just, you know, now they don't want us to know.
Oh, yeah. And then you can go into all the giant bones discovered in the 1800s. And giants were kind of a mainstream topic in mainstream media. Now they're... You know, so it seems like there was more honesty then,
Before even that. Even though, like you said, the secret societies knew about it. I mean, I think what you're talking about as well, that in the Crusades, the Templars probably went to, like Randall talks about this a lot, where they went to the Middle East and came back with secrets. They built the cathedrals afterwards. You know, is the cathedral building the last sort of manifestation of that secret in our culture, you know?
That's an interesting thing. So I don't know if you had seen the director's cut of my documentary, but I also went to Malta and
Oh shit. No, you know what? I saw the Rumble one, I guess. So
yeah.
Yeah. Malta is a place that I've been thinking we should go to.
Yeah. So that place is just layers of history there, you know, but the people in charge of that place would be the Knights of Malta. And I just did a show with William Ramsey about the Knights of Malta. We didn't discuss this ancient stuff as much, but the fact that they these really ancient things there that are megalithic as well. And then you have on top of that, you have this secret society that still controls the world on a large scale that we don't even fully realize, the Knights of Malta.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look at that. What a spot that is, eh? Right between Italy and Tunisia there.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that big plateau there, right? The Malta's like that, just that little peak that's left on that big plateau.
Yeah. Yep. And I don't know if you guys have looked into the cart ruts, but I mean, there are cart ruts that go underwater there. So that makes perfect sense that the sea levels had to have been, you know, lower.
Somebody was telling us about Malta had the biggest cuts, like the circular cuts maybe or something. Did you see those cuts, or was it almost like tube drills, massive tube drills?
Yes, I got those on film. Yep. Yep.
They look pretty cool.
Yeah.
What water do those ruts go into then?
They go right into the Mediterranean.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go in the water to look if they go like deep down, but I think people have already proved that, but I'm not sure. But they also go right off cliffs too, and it just seems like, why? We don't even know what the cart ruts are for. I mean, I haven't heard any good explanations yet in my research, but
it's fuzzy too when you zoom into some places, like some places you can see more. You go into Malta and it's just fuzzy, right? Even though it's shallower, so
right, yeah,
you know,
but. Yeah, and they found elongated skulls there too, with no sagittal suture marks. They have them in their museum. And actually, in that museum, it even says on the wall, are these aliens? Like, I was surprised to see that. But I mean, I don't know. But certainly wouldn't feel it, certainly be painful for the woman to give birth to those babies, because their skull doesn't fold in like a regular human.
What is the mainstream say about those? Do they just ignore it, or do they have but they say they were tying bands around their head or some bullshit
most of the time. But as far as the Malta ones, I never really heard any explanations on the, like I read on the wall, that they don't know. At least they're honest, or pretending to be honest, where a lot of the other elongated skulls, yeah, they say, you know, oh, it's just the native people binding,
trepanning.
Yeah. Just binding skulls and, you know, trying to, but why would they do that in the first place? Like, that's the thing.
Well,
to
honor the gods or the aliens.
Yeah.
They were here in the past.
Yeah.
The visitors. I
mean, it had to be something big to want to do that to your own head, your own kid's head. don't know.
I mean, it could be for looks. It does look pretty cool. I mean,
look smarter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See how pointy you get your head.
Was it?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think there was a lady, and it could be BS, but there was a lady, Karen Hoods, who came out. She worked in the
Karen Hudes. Yeah.
Hudes. Yeah. She talked about the elites having elongated skulls behind the scenes. And that's why the Pope has the martyr hat.
Darren, we had her on. She blew our minds back in like 2014.
No way. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's the one.
Well, she started talking about child, all this crazy stuff. Like, you know, this was way before Pizzagate and all that. And she's basically talking, and we were just like, "Floor, this is like our fifth episode." So we're just like, "What is happening?" We want to talk about Bigfoot and shit.
We were blown away. We're like, child trafficking back then. It was pretty crazy.
That's crazy. Wow. I don't even know if you can get a hold of it.
Front of it. She was way out in front of it. It's crazy.
Did she disappear off the face of the earth?
I don't know where she went.
I don't know where she went. I was actually thinking the other day that we should have her on again and see where she's at these days. But
episode 24, Karen Hudes, famed whistleblower of the corruption of the World Bank, chats with Graham and Darren about the latest indicators, what's happening to the whistleblowers, geopolitics, the financial system, and other conspiracies that will make you wonder what is really going on here.
What a cool guest.
We were too stupid at that time to realize how great of a guest we had. Like, I think it was almost, we were like, it was a joke to us. It was like, we were just, it was way too much. We were way too fresh for that level of a conspiracy. I mean, at that time, we probably weren't even like questioning the 9/11 narrative or anything. We
were just, oh, wow. Oh, know, yeah.
We were there.
We probably were to a certain extent, but we were also just like,
we weren't ready to go that deep. I mean, sometimes it takes years to get into these things.
Well, also to be able to be a good voice, a good host in return to some of these guests. Like I had Max Egan as my 10th episode, and I don't think I was really prepared to have him on. He was like way ahead of me, you know? So
Yeah, that's a good point too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just sent you her profile there, and she's on X still. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, is she? Well, then I'll see if we can have her on the show again. I mean, we are another show. We could almost like keep up with her now.
Yeah. The link from the show notes worked from 2014. So that's a good sign.
Really?
Yeah. It went right from our website to Twitter from 2014. So God,
she managed to not get kicked off.
Yeah. So what do you plan on doing with the LIDAR then? Do you think you're going to be able to get some, rent some, or how are you going to go about that? I mean, it seems to be getting more and more popular as we go along here every month. So,
well, we looked into it. My friend Zach, who's in the documentary too, I think he's looked into that. You can get a drone that can carry a lot, and the LIDAR is getting cheaper and cheaper. I don't know how good the smaller, but I think $800 was a LIDAR you can put on a drone, but all the drones, the drone I own and my friend owns, they're too small to carry it. So you'd have to buy another drone too. And you're looking at about $2,000, but,
And then you got to worry about permits, I guess, for the drones too, and stuff like that, or
I don't know. Yeah. That's a good question, but
I mean, where you were, you should be able to fly. You did fly a drone where you were, right?
Right. We did. Yeah. Yep. So I got, we got this questionable spot on the Big Island. We don't know yet if it's, you know, it's inconclusive, but we would like to go back with LIDAR to check that spot out. And a lot more things have emerged. Like, so when I was told by my friend Seb that there might be a pyramid on the Big Island, I was like, oh, okay. I'll just, throw that in the documentary. That'll be cool. I didn't realize what door I was opening, and all this stuff has just fell into my lap. So it's great, but it's like, we need better tools for the job.
Like what? Like getting people that are like whistleblower in a way, like giving you more information or.
Yeah. Yeah. And spots, I don't want to reveal it too much here just yet, but there's a spot where there was one and they may have left some blocks, and those blocks were used to build something else important out here. And, more spots where there are other ones. And so we got to check them all out. And, you know, some buried history here that has been completely forgotten about, some writings from the 1800s. You know, it's starting to pile up. Like, when I thought, well, maybe this is one lone pyramid, I'll just go, we'll go check it out. That'll be a day trip. No way. It just, it's like huge.
It's turning into a huge project in itself. You can just do one Hawaii, you know, a sequel on Hawaii only, probably.
Right, right. But then all this Australia information is coming my way. So who knows? A sequel might just end up being Hawaii, Australia, but it could, I would like to expand it to the South Pacific. We'll see, you know. Crowdfunding. I mean, I don't make enough to do all those trips. The trips I did do on the documentary were, you know, kind of visiting family places and being able to go, oh, okay, I'm not too far from there. How much is that flight? Okay, let's do that. But, you know, to do it just for this, solely for the documentary, that's going to take some money.
Yeah, exactly. Do you get some time off for your job? Like, is it pretty flexible? Can you get some good chunks off or?
Unpaid, yeah. It's just unpaid.
Okay. Well, we should keep in touch. Maybe we can work something out between your trips and our trips and stuff like that. And
well, yeah. I mean, what you guys are doing is really cool too. I didn't know that you guys were doing the Azores and Randall Carlson and all that. That's awesome. So it's like,
yeah, in Easter Island, and we're always sort of looking for a way to film it or do something with it. So yeah, you know, if that's something you're doing already, then maybe we can. Help each other out or work together somehow.
Yeah. Our plan was to go to Easter Island, and then COVID happened and they quit the flights from Tahiti to Easter Island. So the only way from where I'm at in the world is to go all the way to South America just to fly back out to Easter Island. So I've been kind of discouraged by that, I guess, you know?
Well, yeah. I think you have to go there to do customs now, right?
To Santiago or to Chile? Yeah. Probably. Yeah. It used to be simple. I could go to Tahiti in 5 hours from here and then another 5 hours to Easter Island.
Oh, yeah. Tahiti is like halfway there, kind of, right?
Yeah.
Take a boat. You must be pretty well right there. Maybe you could just, go in a canoe.
paddle like the Polynesians.
Yeah. Go on a reed canoe and see if you can make it all the way there.
That's a lot of open ocean.
You might not ever hear of me again, but I'll give it a shot.
Almost certainly wouldn't. I mean, no offense, but that seems like a tall order. It's probably a lot of open ocean between Hawaii and Easter Island.
No way would I ever do that. There is a kid from here, though. He did a solo adventure from here to Tahiti on a sailboat and sailed to the South Pacific. He's only 19. I mean, it can be done, but that's definitely not my cup of tea. I'm not doing that. No way.
No, that's a bit much. Where was what was your favorite place? What was of all the places you've been? Which one was kind of just if someone was only going to go to one place out of all the places you've been, where would you send them?
Oh God, I don't even know. Maybe Peru, but then, I mean, okay. So the most surprising place was Bosnia, and I'm not even certain that's a pyramid. Like a lot of people say, I don't know, but the energy of the spot when I went there is no joke. Like there's something there and I don't know what it is. And I'm not one to buy into that kind of like new age, like, do you feel it too? Kind of thing. No, I wasn't even looking for it and it hit me. So that was interesting. That was different. And there is megalithic sites kind of near that spot. So, but to say that it's a pyramid, I have no idea, you know, but yeah, I don't know. Peru, though, to me, is a whole world of exploration. Egypt, too. But one thing about Egypt, as you guys probably know, is you get sick of being hassled by people. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's like, a bit much. It's all a bit much there.
I like your style, man. Hacking yourself through the bushlands of Hawaii.
Pyramids, you know? Yeah, nobody's bothering us. Exactly.
But, I mean, there's a whole untapped. I mean, there's somebody else that we had on that was doing that too. There's all that untapped resources in the lower southern Mexico. And I don't know if it goes below Mexico, but the Yucatan, is the Yucatan part of Mexico or is that separate? I think it's part of
Mexico. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just hundreds and hundreds of pyramids and old cities that haven't even been uncovered yet in there. So.
Right.
They're doing like this original exploration too.
There's what is it? Chichen Itza or
Tulum?
No. I don't know. I think it's Palenque. It's like 90% or 2% cover uncovered or something like that. You know.
Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah.
So how do people watch the documentary?
Well, at the moment, right now I have it off of YouTube because of I have a streaming service maybe interested in it, and if that's the case, I can't have it on released on YouTube because then they won't take it. So it's an awkward point in which hopefully it gets on to a streaming service. If not, then I'll put it back on YouTube. But currently, the theatrical versions on Rumble, my Rumble channel's Chant It Down. But if they want to see my director's cut, which includes two more chapters, talk about giants too, that's on Patreon, my Patreon channel. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, we'll put links to all that in the show notes, and that's good. I recommend it. It's a pretty good documentary. I liked it.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah.
It's just inspiring. You know, it's kind of like, you could sort of go for that adventure and maybe find something one day. Right. I mean, who knows? Right.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that we found anything at all is actually pretty crazy, you know, because they act like they've found everything in the world, but they haven't.
So. No, exactly.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. You know, it's like there's stuff still to explore. There's so many answers we need to have. So, I mean, you know, I could spend a lifetime just doing that and not even do any more podcasts, but I love doing podcasts too. So Chant It Down is my podcast in case anybody.
Yeah. Where can people get all that stuff? The Chant It Down podcast. Do you have a website?
Yeah. ChantItDownRadio.com. And then the website for the, totally forgot to plug it, for the documentary is sacredsite.info. So yeah, that's important because that's where they can go straight to the Patreon link and straight to some behind the scenes stuff on there too. So sacredsite.info, but for the podcast, chantitdownradio.com.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for coming on. Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
And let's be in touch.
Nice to finally meet you.
Yeah.
Be in touch. See if we can collaborate on something else.
But yeah, it'd be actually cool to meet somewhere in the world and do a collab for.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah,
exactly. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see. All right, Loomis.
All right, buddy. All
right. Okay. Take care,
Loomis. We'll come back anytime.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
And that was our chat with Loomis. We're not going to have much of an outro because we got another show right away, but check out grandamerica.ca, grandamericaoutlaw.ca, adultbrain.ca, and contact@thecabin.com for all those trips that we were talking about. That. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.